You're listening to the podcast of the Attention Young Choreographer Series 2024. Artistic Direction, Brianna O'Mara and Chris Haring. The series is co-funded by the European Union in the frame of Lifelong Burning, Futures Lost and Found. Today's guest is Deva Schubert, a dancer and choreographer from Berlin. She sat down with author Sean Pfeiffer for a conversation about her work Glitch Choir, one of the winners of the 2024 Impulsdanz Young Choreographers Award. They discussed the ever-changing nature of the piece and how one finds pleasure in a work primarily concerned with grief and lamentation.
Deva, thank you for talking to me. Thank you to Volkstheater as well for letting us record here. And we're talking in August towards the end of Impulsdanz, but your performance Glitch Choir effectively opened this year's festival, being the first actual showing after the Foresight installation opening at MAC. So now, like 4 weeks later, you're back for your Lifelong Burning residency. And yeah, quite a banal question perhaps, but what did you do in the meantime?
I was just here for 4 days for the shows, and then I had this residency in between in Lustenau, Vorarlberg, close to Bodensee on the countryside, starting with the research with Francesca. It's a new collaboration, and that's actually what we're doing now in the residency. We are kind of further developing, finishing this piece, which we show then in Performat in September. I think it's super nice that I could split that showings and the residency, because I feel like now I'm working also on something new or on something different, and it has much more focus, and it's not on top of all the rest of the production. The new piece, it's called Stress Test, and it's basically about voice. We're both very much having a practice in voice, and it's very exciting to exchange. I cannot say a lot because we're still in the middle of defining things. We're figuring out different things around the worlds of stress and regulation systems, but it's also very punky, and it's gonna be I think it's our start, and I really want that it's going to go further, and hopefully we can develop it into more.
Yeah, you said that a voice is a big part of it. A Glitch Choir is as much a vocal performance as it is a dance performance, I would say. Was the voice always such an integral part of your performative practice, or when did that interest and research begin?
No, I mean, I have more background in fine arts and dance, and I studied in HCT, and in the first semester I wanted to work on a solo practice, and I went to Montreal to be really far from all my friends, and a lot of people who distract me in the studio, and I wanted to be alone to concentrate more. And my grandmother died before, and I went with her through the death, supporting her. She really wanted to die, so it was a very beautiful death. And she somehow had this, she yodeled a lot. And I realized when I was in Montreal, 2 or 3 months after, I started to actually on the bike, very nearby, next to it, I started to yodel. And I was what is this? Where does that come from? And then I started to look into the techniques of yodeling, and I got really obsessed. I can get very obsessed with voice. I thought it's a great material. Also because I thought I cannot sing, and I heard that a lot when I was young, that I'm singing wrong and all that. So it was really nice that I felt this yodeling needs to be so loud. It's like a call into the future over the mountain. So I thought it's a great technique to really to be afraid of my voice. That's basically how I started to, 2018 I think, started to work with voice. And I had the solo practice where my first solo came out. It was called Leaks. I really love this jump of the voice in yodeling. And then now in Glitch Choir, actually, we were I was really thinking, what is the opposite of a yodel? of a jump of a voice, which has this only functions through this gap, basically. I feel like it's something like combining. It's something like overtone singing or something, like where you combine like two different notes and it becomes like this kind of one note into like multi resonances. And then also I feel it's nice, actually I just realized it now, that then this topic of grief, also grief because of, I think, where I was in life, also of losing very important people in my life, but also because of relationship, also because of health. I feel like it was like many reasons which brought me to this grieving, and also this ideas around and thoughts about collective grief, where can collective grief happen, and where are the spaces for collective grieving. And so I came to this lamento, which actually then I recomposed and I also implanted a little bit of yodels. And I think it's also somehow connected to the death of my grandmother, somehow, strangely. But it's like all somehow always coming together.
I want to ask more about the lament, or like specifically about how your like vocal research, like at what point did it intersect with historical research into the lamento or into the work of grieving?
I think so. First of all, the lamento was not there. I really started from working a lot with AI before, and then this seeing like and working with voice. That was kind of the bubbles, the worlds where I came from. And then I thought, I felt more that actually grief or emotions are kind of a glitch, because you somehow you react on something which makes you kind of feel like not being able to function anymore for a second, or like this kind of. So I really thought like emotion is as a glitch, and glitch also, of course, like this distortion, distorting image from what we know also through technology. But I felt like, strange enough, technology and emotions are meeting there very well, and I felt that this grief as a glitch on a social level. Yeah, I was very interested in that. And then also voice-wise, I thought, okay, what could be that, that kind of glitch in the voice? And we came through this, I figured, trying out different things in the studio, but we figured out that this dissonances, when you sing like a tiny note, like half note, almost half note, above or below a tone, then this kind of dissonance flickering starts, and like a third tone arises, like either deeper or higher. And this kind of multi-resonances which comes, I felt, was like a vocal resonance. I was like referring to glitch I was interested in. And then I was talking with my voice teacher, Doreen, and she's been kind of going with me through the kind of, through different stages in the piece and like doing vocal coaching. She's also my yodel teacher, actually. But what is nice that then I was like really much talking with her about emotion as labor, and then she came up with this song, it's this lamento song basically. It's more or less the bass for the choir, which is kind of more of camouflaged and coming to be visible in the end of the piece. And what is really beautiful, that she got the song from an old lady in Italy. It's like Albanian Italy. And she was singing it to her. And when we were sitting together, she went into her memory and she kind of tried to re-bring it back through her memory and started to write it down. But because she wrote it down from her memory, there's not really like, it's more like a score. It's not like clear notes or... And it was super nice because it's also this super interesting notes which were not like going in an octave. It was like jumping a little bit lower than you thought. We always have like this kind of parts which were very hard to remember, I feel, singing. It was like this really like, not this ding-dong, it was like ding-dong. It became, there was like the logic of it was very interesting. And then we took it more as material and also like kind of recomposed it. Decomposed it into three voices, and then also emerging our this dissonances inside, because the dissonances actually came from this very, very first image actually I had, or like more like a really big question of like, what is like, because normally when I do a piece afterwards, I feel so empty. Sometimes I feel like so drained, and it's like giving birth almost, and everything is so fragile, and I feel so like I have no skin or something. And yeah, and I had this image, and it was really like this, what is if voice is a gift and I also get something, you know, like I really get something for myself. And that made it so, I'm almost getting emotional, sorry. But it was so beautiful. I remember this first rehearsals we had, and I was like, okay, what is if you sing like a very personal, very emotional song, and you sing it as a gift for the other person, but into the mouth. And there is like mouth-to-mouth singing, vibrating the mouth as like a whole instrument, basically, to explore. And like this resonance is, yeah, this idea started there, basically.
Glitch Choir is both, I would call it like both a duo with like you and Chihiro, but also like, then it's also, it becomes a group piece in a way through the work with the choir. And at the Impulse Tanz press conference in June, you mentioned having just returned from a residency in Japan at, I wrote it down, at Dance Base Yokohama, also showing your piece there. And you work with different choir members in every city. So I want to ask how that changes the performance, and perhaps even how it specifically was in Japan. And then more generally, how the collaboration with these performers looks like, and what the things are that you talk about, or is it way more like direct and physical?
Yeah, I think it really. Japan was a bit different because basically, normally we go and we are the two of us, this duet of me and Chihiro, and then the local choir, which sometimes is like a ready choir, where they rehearse the song and then they like come into a rehearsal, or as it was here in the festival, that basically I was looking around for like performers who work with voice, have a voice experience, and they were bringing a friend or something. And in Japan was a bit different because we had like four local performers from Tokyo, and we didn't have that choir. But what was nice in Japan was that we could, what I always wanted to do is that we could really like compose this mouth-to-mouth with like two mouth-to-mouth, because we were like four people, so two couples. And so I had like two mouths basically to choreograph, and I was staying outside. And it was really nice to kind of define that, but also, I mean, Japan, the culture around dance is so different. It's very, there's like this very clear hierarchy to a choreographer. So it took us a while to really like, get them into the mode of what is collaborating and working on the same horizontal line, because we really established that. Yeah, and also this interesting, it was super interesting because the piece in the end, what we did there, that we took this mouth-to-mouth material, but then we further developed it and it got much more punky. And somehow it came through, I don't know, this very, we started this deep research around Japan noise and went to a lot of female punk concerts. And what was super interesting that I feel like they're like, they function all so on a formal level so well, but then if you really manage to go beyond and reach something where they really open up, it's basically almost shocking or even more crazy to see what's coming out. Yeah, did I answer everything? I don't know.
Kind of like touched upon something that was like my main, I don't know, not concern, but like my main interest or fascination with the work, because it has something to do, I think, with the technical ability and then the emotion behind it, or the emotion that comes through the technical ability. Maybe I'm going on like a bit of a tangent. But in spring and in early summer, I had to write a couple of promotional texts about the piece for Impulse Tanz, only having seen the recording. And in like reading about the piece, like the theme of lamentation and grieving, it was like very prevalent, of course. And Glitch Choir could be simply read as like a performative study of one emotion, and it does that very intensely. And it is a very like emotional piece. Like many people I've spoken to were like very touched, and some cried. But I have to say, like while I was like extremely impressed with it, going to sound very banal, but like I wasn't primarily sad or deeply emotional watching it. Like I may have tried to not look at it solely through the lens of lamentation, perhaps because I read about it so much beforehand. Mm-hmm. There was like some curiosity in like watching it and like perhaps even like trying to project other emotions onto it or something, or like trying to like not neutralize it, but like, yeah, finding different things in it. And I think it has to do with the fact that there's no explicit loss or tragedy that like the performed grief is directed at. And because of that, I found myself thinking about the sound itself, about like what makes a sound sad, or what makes a sound like it's expressing sadness. Mm-hmm. Like, is it only us recognizing like it as projecting sadness, as like wanting to project sadness? So yeah, I thought about like what we reach for like physically and sonically and instinctively, even when expressing grief. And so the piece, like on the one hand, to come to my question, it does what it like promises in a way, like offering a space for like collective lamentation, but it does other things as well. Looking at you in some moments during the performance, I'd say there was also like a visible pleasure in performing and in how perfectly the movements and the sounds interlink. And at other times, I even thought of like an Elvis-like entertainer figure because of like your like slicked back hair and then like the shiny shoes and like the wide-legged pants. And there's like something that I wouldn't normally associate with like grieving. Mm-hmm. So this is a very, very, very long-winded way of asking about like maybe like the malleability or the mutability of this notion of lament. And like, is it, like, as a performer, is it about grasping an actual, like, deep feeling of grief and, like, channeling it? And if so, like, how do you leave space for, like, the sheer, like, momentary, like, pleasure of performance and the different emotional avenues it may take you down that aren't necessarily grief?
Mm. Well, if I feel... for sure, there is this kind of big question also coming through the choir about like this collective grief and how to like transform and navigate and kind of channel and like. But for me, I feel like also because of having this experience with my grandmother, which was in the end very positive for me, and also experiencing like different feelings, and also this the lamento is originally done by this lamento woman who actually get paid to cry at funerals, and so it's a job basically, and they get even better paid if they perform it well, if they like pull their hairs, if they rip their shirt, if they smash their chest. So it has this also kind of fakeness to it, and that's why the whole piece starts basically with this eye drops, and we put this kind of fake tears into our eyes, which is also like a kind of little humorous like wink also to see like emotion in different ways of and it's also funny, I think, that we are performing it also. When do you perform? When do you feel like all this navigation? But I think we had a lot of pleasure also in the piece, exploring glitch and grief as a ghost, as a rock star, in different, really, really different ways. So I think that's where like the notes of like this Elvis Presley or humor or like these moments come in. And I think also it is. It's nice that it's like, in the beginning I see it really, or I really didn't thought about making a piece. It was like more like 8 yeah, like a lot of time of just research, and I wanted to create a practice. I was really interested in this practice. What is a practice? Na, na, na. But then, because I spent so much time with Chihiro and also in Japan, and I feel there is like this, there's this very deep trust in the two of us, where like more and more I feel like after the first time I kind of put it together into something like choreography and dramaturgy and na, 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 there is this moment where I started to kind of put all the choreography out more and more, just like the whole grid, taking it out, taking it out, taking out all the layers. And it's interesting to see what stays and to see what happens if we have so much freedom and knowing, but still knowing what we are going for and where we are, where we want to like bring it. And that brings like, yeah, that each show get very different also and has a lot of, I feel like freedom and therefore potential to really create extremely pleasurable and funny moments. And also in the space here, I mean, it was very challenging because it's so huge. And I think in the beginning, I really felt like I'm losing Chihiro because it's so big. It's like, where is she, you know, in space? And I feel like this, like, then we implanted to have more moments together, which we didn't even know if they're going to happen or not. And like, I feel like it has a lot of potential in its accidents also, which like, yeah, makes it for me very fun to play and to navigate around. I mean, there's also this moment of like this auto-tune on the crying. And I think it's also like this very much humorous aspect of like, almost like a cry, we call it almost crying competition. Like this kind of battle, but at the same time, like with this auto-tune, it gets very estranged. And yeah, I feel like this like humor is a huge part of it somehow.
It's interesting that you talk about like the moments that Chihiro and you have together in the room, and that you thought of like losing her in the big space. But there are like also like a lot of moments where you like connect without connecting physically, where like you perform on the sound level and she performs on like a movement level, but it kind of like it feels like you are like synchronizing her or like almost like dubbing her movement like with audio. And what like really like grabbed me in and like intensely like physical way was how you through these moments like managed to control the Mumok space, but not in a very like orderly fashion, but in an always surprising and sometimes very disorienting way. It's quite incredible how like the choir members like pop up one by one and then disappear again, because you start to see them and you feel like you know what's going to happen and they're going to come together and form a choir, but it doesn't happen for a very long time. They just disappear again, and there was like something very strange about like not knowing who is going to start to sing, and then they start to sing, and then you think you know, okay, they're part of it, but then the moment they stop singing, you kind of like lose them again, and you forget like who was part of it and who wasn't. There's like something like positively unsettling in a way about this like orchestrated disorder, I would call it. And I had like a genuine feeling of something unexpected that might happen, not only like for us, the audience, but for you, the performers as well. So you already kind of touched upon like this ambivalence or like this perhaps like contradiction between the freedom of it and the score. I think I would be interested like in more like technical, like even on like a more technical level, like how do you inhabit that score while allowing you that freedom? Do you have like moments where you know you're going to meet each other, or are there also like things that you have planned, but then maybe you miss them and you just like keep going?
It has a lot of I would say both. Well, it starts with a very clear score. This voice is a gift. This like, can I sing into the mouth, which is pretty much clear that we meet and with the mouth, but where like we have like a trajectory in space where we meet, but how we meet is also not that clear. And the voices are very composed there. but the body has the freedom, let's say. And I think it's all either. It's, I also found it hard to do that at the same time, being very precise and with the voice and very precise with the body. It's like this co-presence really hard, can be very challenging. So I think sometimes we really go more with the defining the, like really composing the voice, and then the body is more free, and sometimes the body is, let's say, more composed, and then the voice is more free. Like in the end, for example, when we do more this kind of squeezing, pushing out the voice through like kind of this wrestling, jumping on the ribs situation that we kind of activate the voices, but the body is starts more formal, and this is more clear, but then the voice is super improvised on that. And it's more about like how we actually glitch the voice physically. And then it's, yeah, it's really basically about like how am I get the most physical glitch out of Chihiro's voice. That's the aim. There's not so much, basically there's not so much to it. And then there's this big part in the middle where I'm doing like more this, like I feel like I'm more like connecting to the emotional landscape Chihiro is kind of visiting, and then connecting it with my emotional landscape, and trying to like, it's also really changing on if I, then I'm kind of navigating like a membrane to this audience, which also gives me a lot of influence. And there is meetings if possible, but sometimes we fail, sometimes we lose, sometimes we hit, sometimes we try to be connected lively, but we never really know what's going to happen there, actually. Also, I think here we had quite some moments where I feel like, for example, someone was filming Chihiro and she took that moment to play with it. And to take it, so like this kind of like also staying alive in the moment of what's going to happen, or
through working with different people again and again on this piece, I imagine is there a point where you think like, okay, it's finished, I can like move on to another thing now? You already mentioned that you do other things as well, but is it like still something that you are going to continue to expand in a way, or that you're continuing to experiment with?
Yeah, I really hope. I mean, I love it a lot, and I think it has a lot of potential still. I feel like I still want to do a version where the piece starts in the middle, like with a lot of energy and this kind of in the middle of the rock star-ish moment, and it kind of goes in a different dramaturgy. I think I would be very curious about that. And I think it would be amazing to one day, I don't know, when and how, but do it with like more people. Also, this mouth-to-mouth singing would be amazing, to have more mouths doing that at the same time. Also, it would be amazing to have a bigger choir. Of course, all that would be a dream. But I have not so much planned. We are showing a tiny, very only vocal version in Marseille in Sistema now in August, with like a ready local choir from Marseille. So let's see. I think a short version in a staircase on this kind of art fair, fine art kind of thing. I'm very excited because I think it's just me and Chihiro and this choir, and we think, yeah, we're going to do like a more rock and roll version, I think, there. But then there's nothing planned, and hopefully we can continue working on it. I really felt like one day I told a friend, like, I feel like I could do glitch choir my whole life. I don't need to do a new piece, actually. It would be my dream, but I don't know how.
Well, I hope I get to see it again in a different setting, perhaps with more people or less people. Thank you so much for talking to me, Deva, and enjoy the rest of your stay in Vienna, and come back soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You have been listening to the Attention Young Choreographers Series podcast. To never miss a new episode, follow us on Spotify, Podcast Addict, or Deezer. For more artist conversations, visit our websites lifelongburning.eu and impulsedance.com.